Hey, Fred DeLore here, former conservative campaign manager, now full-time storyteller. I'm going on background today with a good friend to talk about our mutual friend, Pierre Poilievre, and whether he has enough friends to actually form government in case of a minority government. So let's go on background and explore whether Pierre Poilievre has a path to government in a minority parliament situation. Yes, look, the Conservatives are way ahead in the polls right now, and the MRP model from Abacus Data has the party winning 204 seats in the next election, which would be only the third time in history anyone has ever gotten over 200 seats. But we are likely 2 years away from an election, and the Liberal Party is beginning to show some signs of life. They just hired a new marketing person, Max Vallecat, who sounds like he's going to be focused on building their message, both their positive brand and their attacks against their opponents. And let's keep in mind that since the Conservative Party of Canada was formed into its current entity, there have been 7 general elections in this country. And five of them have resulted in a minority parliament. So, it's possible we may see this become more competitive. And even though the polls don't say it right now, history tells us, in all likelihood, in a political system that's first past the post with 4 political parties that can win seats, we may very well be headed to yet another minority parliament. The question that's on my mind is, will Poilievre be able to govern from that position? Joining me for this conversation on background is my good friend Tasha Michaud, former chief of staff to the leader of the Conservative Party and leader of the official opposition, Aaron O'Toole. Tasha Michaud, so awesome to have you on here. I've been looking forward to this for some time to sit down and chat scenarios with you and where we think this is all going
to
go.
Well, I'm just happy to be here chatting politics. We're not in a bar, but we do have drinks. So looking forward to it.
It's basically a bar, right?
Sure.
The beautiful studio at iPolitics is essentially a bar where we're sitting around telling.
And for those who know
stories.
Me, yes, I have gin.
And I'm always drinking a beer. So that's what I got.
Well, let's get to it.
So look, I was the campaign person, but you were the person dealing with the day-to-day of the leader's office, the caucus, parliamentary affairs, and with that, of course, relationships with the other political parties. So, before we get into whether Poilievre can govern after the next election, going back to when you and I were heavily involved, do you think Aaron O'Toole would have had a chance to govern if we got more seats than the other parties, but a minority situation?
I like to think so, yes. Obviously, you know, we're speaking in hypotheticals, mm-hmm. but the environment was a little bit different too. We were obviously in the midst of a pandemic, and that made, frankly, everything more difficult, including relationship building. You know, it's not like you could go grab
That's right.
a drink.
Right.
You know, you were on the phone or maybe on a Zoom meeting, and when you don't
you
have
You weren't bumping
those...
into each other in the hallways,
Absolutely.
Right? Because you weren't
no.
in the hallways.
No, there was nobody in the hallways.
Right.
So, and in my experience in politics, you know, the best relationship building is always in person. Everybody mm-hmm. feels more confident. And so it was a bit of a weird environment to be operating in the first place. But that being said, Aaron was, you know, he was a pretty collaborative guy. I don't think that's any secret. You know, he had good working relationships with the other party leaders. Did they agree on things? You know, by and large, no. But there was a collaboration and I think mutual respect in many cases. So as you remember, you know, the lead up to the campaign, we were in a minority situation, much like now. So, you know, you and I were constantly starting and stopping on campaign planning. It was like 1 week we're like, oh my
right.
gosh, we're going. The next week we're like, there's no way we're going. And then, sure enough, they dropped it on us in the summer when we were right at the midst of another surge in the COVID pandemic. So,
funny timing, eh?
Oh yeah, exactly. So much fun. But all that to say is, I think, you know, we were very up and down on it, and you had a bit more of an informed perspective, having gone through the minority days in 2006 and 2008. But I think the biggest challenge was definitely going to be, you know, the number of seats. Like at one point, our polling showed we might win by one.
Right,
What does that look like? If we won by 20, what does that look like? All of the scenarios kind of had different friction points that we were planning out. I think, you know, looking ahead, it's not that dissimilar from then, in that you know, Trudeau would be, well, he's delivered minority governments. Those are still considered a loss in the traditional political game of, you know, majority or bust.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the case anymore where they're the north. Like,
I think again, the conservatives thinking there is nowadays.
Five of the last seven elections, though, have been a minority parliament.
Yeah.
So I think majority is the rarity. I think that's it's going. We feel it when you get a majority because you have full supreme power. You can control everything, and you have 4 years to do it. I still think it's not as long as we think. And it's not as permanent as we think. I think minority parliaments is always going to be the default with four strong political parties.
Yeah, I see your point. And I think obviously there's a big discussion to be had on the regional elements of that too, which is not what we're talking about today. But that being said, I think one of the challenges in the Conservative Party, and please do let me know if you agree or disagree, but our base, you know, they've never been able to understand how anybody can vote for Justin Trudeau. So there's always this expectation that we're just going to, you know, storm the election and win a majority. So it becomes a difficult expectation management, right? Like so you're not only managing the perspective of the various other political parties in a situation where you might have to work with them, but you're also managing, you know, your own voter coalition and how they feel about it.
We're seeing it in the United States right now in the House of Representatives where they elect a speaker, and the speaker is basically their version of a prime minister in terms of running the parliamentary calendar and the legislation that comes forth. And they're struggling with that big time. I think we would have had a similar problem. I think I think if you go back to it, to 2021, the Bloc Québécois, you know, the Premier Legault basically said he wanted a blue government. So that's conservative and a Bloc Québécois working together. So I think the Bloc would have been open, absolutely open, to support a conservative government. They also like chaos. They're a party that just likes change for the sake of change whenever you can have it. And that goes every which way, right? And I think the NDP, if you look at Jagmeet Singh, in 2019, he was very clear he would never support Andrew Scheer. In 2021, he refused to say what he would do after the election. Now, I think that there may have been some politics involved in that where he didn't want to, I think he hurt himself in 19 when he did that. He almost just, you know, basically, okay, then you better vote Liberal then, and if you're worried about Andrew Scheer is what he was saying. So it may not have been open to voting or supporting an O'Toole prime ministership in 21, but he was certainly open to it based on not attacking him.
Well, and kind of back to voter coalitions, I think that's actually kind of easily explained for those who are as deeply involved as we were at the time. And that is that the voter coalition has changed for both the NDP and the Conservatives. The Conservatives are eating their lunch with private labor.
Yeah, there's a huge shift.
I should say we were very much trying to emulate some of the success of our provincial cousins.
Yeah, Monty McNaughton in Ontario,
absolutely.
I think, and Doug Ford started the march towards that, right, of Conservatives. And it's so funny when you think as, you know, you and I are Conservatives and you and I come from blue-collar families that these are people that should be voting Conservative, if you know.
Absolutely. You know, it's, you know, traditional kind of Conservative cultural values in particular. Yeah. And I think, you know, we were, as you know well, we were spending a lot of time, and that was very personally important to Aaron, was to appeal to those voters. So I think the NDP was smart enough to realize that it wasn't going to be as helpful to beat up on us because in some areas we were going after the same set of voters.
Right.
And I think that's still holding true. Like you're seeing Mr. Polyev follow the same roadmap,
right? He's been very aggressive on that, going after that. And we're seeing it now in the polling. It's showing up where he's leading in, he probably leads in almost every single demographic in the country, but he's leading in the public sector and private union support. The public sector one being a real eyebrow raiser, right? Given Conservatives traditionally are, you know, when they come to cutting, it's government spending, and that would hit the public unions. A question I've been asked is, you know, if Aaron had a one and formed government, how long could we have kept our own coalition within the Conservative Party together? That is a heck of a struggle at times, right? We are a very diverse party, which I think means we're a healthy party. There's lots of different opinions and lots of strengths, but there's a lot of clashing that goes on behind the scenes, and it's a lot of work. And I don't know, and I'm not going to ask, unless you want to give your opinion.
Well, we know nothing about that, Fred.
Right. Well, exactly. When we lost, we knew it didn't work. But even if he had won, I don't know how long that would have lasted.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine, but like talking through it, I think there's a few things that people haven't been talking about when it comes to what a change in government at a minority level would look like. And that is the impact on the other two or three parties, frankly, and their leadership.
Right.
Like Trudeau in the next election, that will have been his third loss. Like, I don't know how else to position it. You went from a majority, you went down to a minority, and that's your ceiling.
Right.
The knives are already kind of out. We're seeing that pretty consistently in media coverage around
town. He did take the party from 35 seats to government.
Oh, come on. Nobody remembers that. It's what
I think,
did for me today.
I think those
yesterday.
MPs who still have jobs because of that.
Sure. I think that they would all argue that it's, you know, and this happens in caucuses often, is, you know, when things aren't going well, unity's a challenge. When things are going well, you know, people are more focused on the task at hand.
Right. So Poilievre, for him to be a successful minority prime minister, to even take the reins of power, needs friends. He needs allies in the House of Commons, if it's a minority parliament. And I'm looking across the aisle, and all I see are people who probably dislike him more than they've liked any other conservative leader in history. Like Harper,
I don't know
was.
If I agree. I don't know. I don't know if it matters, actually, because I think in that situation, I think the other teams are going to be in a state of chaos. Like they're going to have their own chaos for once. For once,
but not if they can keep some. If they could form some kind of a coalition. If I think the Liberals.
I think
and
you're
the
underestimating.
Democrats.
I think you're underestimating the knives for Trudeau. You know, he has had a hold on the party for a long time. Yes, he came from third place to a majority government. I think you're underestimating the self motivation of some and the dynamics that are at play there. I really, really do. And there's a few hypotheticals there as well. In a situation where they have like taken the bulk of, if the Liberals have survived via taking NDP seats, well, they're not going to be in a very collaborative mood either, because they're going to be having their identity crisis. Like, what does our voter coalition look like?
That's the question. If the Liberals do well, it's because they ate that NDP vote, which could be, if this is a Trudeau versus Poilievre election, could happen. But if we're in a minority situation, it means that the NDP likely held on to something.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of regional elements that could play out. Like if Pierre dominates the 905 and the Liberals manage to, you know, eat selective NDP seats here and there, again, I just think the identity crisis and the leadership ambitions of others and the frustrations will all come to a boiling point. And I think at that point, they will all have to opt to focus on their own house rather than than what's going on with Poilievre.
But if their house means they could govern together, and I'm obviously hopeful that
I'm not sure any of them are going to want to govern together is my point.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thing with the NDP. I don't know what their goals are.
I think they're obviously naturally in a more collaborative position, just because, you know, their hope is to obviously gain seats. Like do they
care? I don't know what
they
care about.
I think they do.
I don't know. For what? To what do they eventually just want to?
Well, then
be
they've
in
really
government?
Got an identity crisis if they don't care.
But I
know.
I think they enjoy their salaries. I think they enjoy being talking about fringe left wing issues. And
again,
then,
identity crisis. This is all going back to identity crisis for me. This is where the NDP, you know, they've lost the hold on their traditional voter coalition, and they lost it to a place I don't think they were expecting to lose it to. And that's not to the Liberals. That's to the Tories.
Right. And that's an interesting point where, you know, if you break down Canada by progressive voter versus conservative voter, about 60% of Canada is progressive and 40% are conservative.
I still remember when our pollsters did their first major poll and said, wow, Canada has got to be one of the most progressive countries in the world. And we were like, oh, yeah, well, certain parts are like, no, everywhere.
I remember, yeah, exactly, when they said Western Canada was more progressive than many European countries. That blew me away when I heard that.
Yeah, me too. And
this was a pollster that was a UK pollster that did stuff all over the world for conservative parties. But that's the thing where the leftists, the progressives are split really amongst three parties. I think small C conservative voters vote bloc, but the people they elect are progressives or left wing. So that's where the split is. And that's where I think, you know, the NDP, I just don't know why they exist.
Yeah. And I think at that point, if Pierre's won enough to form government, you know, the breath is going to be in the sails of the Tories. They're going to be focused on getting to work and showing Canadians exactly that, you know, here we are, we're not scary, we're ready to get to work. And
but just on that point, his very first bill, one of his very first things needs to be, if he's saying this is going to be a carbon tax election, doesn't that that's what his own message is. He's saying, I need a majority government. Because the other three parties support a carbon tax. So if that's the first thing he's going to want to, right, if you recall,
which is, I can't imagine a world in which he's going to say, like, first 100 days, this is what's going to happen.
Right.
Carbon tax,
the very
be
first bill
to that.
In 2006 Absolutely. Was the Accountability Act.
Yep.
That was the first thing Harper ran on, right? Was the Accountability Act. And the NDP and the Bloc were aligned with this. They wanted it written a bit differently, but they were aligned with the primary thing that Harper ran on. But Poilievre wants to make this a carbon tax election. The NDP and the Bloc do not support what he wants to do. I think right out of the gate, isn't that not set up for failure if he doesn't get a majority?
I'm sticking to my identity crisis here. At that point, well, you're already seeing it. You've got Trudeau's done a carbon tax carve out. Who's seen that coming? I didn't see that coming. Let's be very honest here. Didn't see that happening. And the people that lost in that election, they're going to be causing all kinds of noise and headaches. And the ones who did held on, they're going to be questioning everything. You know, in liberals' minds, the world has now ended. Pierre Poilievre is prime minister. I think that the chaos that will ensue in their own house is a big, big issue. And
so
obviously the
it.
Big opportunity for
Poilievre.
So you think
if Poilievre gets the most seats, that the other parties are just, they're just totally beside themselves and will...
Yeah. I think it's quite similar to what you're seeing play out in Ontario here. I really, really do.
Well, how's that in Ontario? What are we seeing here?
You've got an identity crisis with the NDP. They don't know who they are. They overwhelmingly lost their private sector labor vote to Doug Ford. It's very comfortable there. Even the Liberals are trying to figure out, like, okay, so the NDP's gone, you know, so far activist left, and the Tories have now got this great coalition of you know, and this concept of, like, working for workers and getting it done. You know, where do we fit in to this world? And I think that you're going to see that emulated at the federal level.
Right. So on the Trudeau thing, and I am no Trudeau apologist. I think I've spent half my life trying to defeat Trudeau. And when I was in university, I wrote papers about how terrible his father was as prime minister. So I believe if he pulls this out and somehow wins even a minority government, having been so far back in the polls, this will be his fourth comeback win. This he will go when he wants to go. There is no removing Justin Trudeau if that happens. And Jagmeet Singh, I do agree. I think this guy has been mostly a dud, and I've been very vocal about that. You know, he has something now. We have this coalition that we are this supply and confidence agreement, which I think is an evolution in Canadian politics. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to be going down further road. I don't know what the NDP ever actually want, though. I think they really enjoy being members of parliament and collecting that salary and championing their little causes. I don't know if they ever actually want to govern. But looking back in the past, if you go back to the minority parliaments when conservatives win, they haven't always worked out so well. Like Diefenbaker got in, he had a rough year, and the Liberals, he was the first, well, Arthur Meehan before that, and it lasted a day or so. So Diefenbaker gets in, minority parliament, and the Liberals challenge him, basically tell him he's terrible, you should call another election. He did, and he gets a majority government. Fast forward 20, 30 years, Joe Clark wins in 1979. His government doesn't even last a year. It just collapses. And Trudeau 1 comes back. And Harper, it was a different scenario, though, when Harper did it in 2006. Because if you remember in 2005, that fall, the Liberals lost power because the Conservatives, the NDP, and the Bloc all voted no confidence in that government. It was a minority government. They brought them down. It put us right into an election. And the Conservatives win. There was no path for the Liberals at that time because all the parties had already said no to you. But I remember election night watching when Mike Robinson, the late Mike Robinson, who was a great contributor to Canadian politics, he mused on I think it was on CBC, where he said, the Liberals may try to stay on. And I remember sitting in the room with folks, and our eyebrows went up. He quickly corrected himself, but it was that weird, like, could they try to do it? Even though, because in Canada we have this thing: whoever wins the most seats should crack.
Well, and it's government. Interesting you say that, because I would very much argue that the Accord has now set a precedent that would make a lot of people say that, like, look, we have proof that we can work together. So I think that's a big, big challenge that, right, frankly, you and I weren't really weighing in 2021. We have, you know,
there was no,
you can argue
then,
we have a coalition. They can call it an accord all they want. It's a coalition.
Right. Yeah. And on that front with the supply and confidence agreement, I didn't realize until a few weeks ago, like the whole pharmacare legislation. So Minister Freeland brought in the fall economic statement, and there's no new money for pharmacare. And my eyebrows went up on that. There's no money for this. Where is this going? I didn't realize until speaking with an NDP friend of mine that there was never a deal to actually put a single dollar into pharmacare. The whole deal is just legislative. It's about creating a bill and the framework to put it in a future parliament or government to bring in pharmacare, billions of dollars of additional spending. So I wonder if this is almost like part one of SACA, and after the next election is when we may see the Liberals and the New Democrats, okay, now we're going to fund these projects and come together. Maybe that's something that the Liberals are considering, and the New Democrats too, to continue this game. But I also think at the same time, with the first past the post system, I think we're getting closer and closer our country is to having coalition parties coming together and actually having different parties represented in government.
Yeah, I agree. It is a bit more commonplace internationally than a lot of people realize. It's kind of been a third rail here at the federal level, but I think you're seeing it kind of start to play out. Doesn't mean that it has the widespread acceptance that some might think. And if you look back to the 08 days, having an accord or a coalition, whatever you want to call it, that included the BQ is a different beast entirely.
Yes.
Completely different
beast.
That's
what entirely saved us in 2008. Mm-hmm. I remember I was working in the Prime Minister's office at the time. We won re-election. We had the most seats. It was still a minority parliament. And we had a speech from the throne, and that passed through. And then we brought in the fall economic statement, brought in plans to cut party funding where they wouldn't get taxpayer dollars anymore. And all the opposition parties were like, wait a second, that's not cool. We're not down for that. So they tried to bring us down. They formed a coalition. And funny story, I was actually signing my mortgage papers with my wife. We had just found out we were having our first kid, and we were both political staffers in Ottawa, about to lose our jobs because the coalition was going to take over government. I worked in the Prime Minister's office. She worked for the Treasury Board. And we signed our mortgage papers at the same time that Stéphane Dion, Jack Layton, and Gilles Duceppe of the Bloc Québécois were signing the coalition deal. And I remember walking out into the lobby of the mortgage broker, and Derek was his name, and he looked up and was on the big TV that he had in the corner saying, hey, crazy stuff going on in Parliament right now. And I'm like, yep, that's great. We sign our papers. Like,
gotta go.
Government of Canada employees is all they needed to know, not knowing that we may just be on the brink of losing our jobs and not able to have this mortgage. Now, this is back when people could buy houses.
Right, right. Different time. Yeah.
So it was, but what killed it, Gilles Duceppe putting his name on it. And that's what makes the next thing difficult for the Liberals to try to keep going is, can they keep, you know, they need to keep, it's got to be red plus orange, I think. I don't know what the Bloc does. It's a carbon tax election. Well, the Bloc's in favor of a carbon tax. Mm-hmm. They voted against the Conservatives on all of these votes. One of them would have to give. I don't see either of those forces giving.
Oh, me either.
So I don't see how, and I think that's where we get to where Poilievre, I'm not sure what his path is if this is a minority parliament to actually form government.
Well, then it could be a majority.
It has to be, I think. Yeah. I shouldn't say it has to be. I think if they win by a large number of seats and are close to a majority, it'll be hard. But at the same time, it's not. I mean, the math is simple. If it's Liberal plus NDP, and if the Bloc are willing to prop them, what was different in 2008, Harper was prime minister, he could call an election, he could do different things. Trudeau still maintains that power.
Well, Blanchet also got rid of his beard, so he's now unelectable.
Right.
In my opinion.
Right, right. So on that front, when you were chief of staff, what was it like working with the Bloc Québécois? Because I'm told from a campaign perspective, it was very hard to get any kind of conversation with them. And we had a Quebec team, as you recall, in the Conservative Party for our campaign. We had a separate Quebec entity that worked very well in terms of messaging and recruitment of candidates and whatnot. But actually working with the other side on campaigns, communicating with the other side, was very hard. Did you find that the same with the Bloc?
Well, I've got to give credit where credit's due, and much like the campaign team, we had a designated Quebec team in the OLL led by a deputy chief of staff, Martin Blanchet,
right. who was also on the campaign doing the
same.
Who was
also on the and exactly moved into the campaign role. But you know, they did an incredible job of at least making the outreach effort. You know, is it always reciprocated? No, but we could say the same thing that there was times when they would come to us and we're like, you don't have a dance partner right now or on this issue or whatever. But I think that the effort was put in there, and to the Quebec team's credit, both in the OLO and on the campaign team, a significant amount of time went into just trying to be collaborative. So that's, nobody should take for granted how much work goes into that particular relationship. And the politics in Quebec are shifting in a way that you're seeing the BQ actually have more influence at this particular moment.
The Parti Québécois are now surging in the polls and now in competing with the CAQ for government.
Yeah.
So that changes the whole dynamic in this country as well, right? When you have the Bloc sister party.
Yeah. So the BQ is always, it's kind of the difficult one to kind of scenario plan for, just because they obviously are regional. They are a separatist party, which immediately eliminates
them.
The poison pill, as everybody always says, is that you would not be able to, I can't imagine a scenario in which the Conservative Party would be able to work with the Bloc Québécois, because it's just so against our roots.
No party can. The Liberals can, obviously. They're their main competitors in many ways. No party can when you have that separatist tinge to them. That's what kills them. So I just don't know where this goes. How Poilievre, and right now in Quebec, they're running very aggressive attack ads against the Bloc Québécois. They're really poisoning that well. And again, he's going for the majority. That's clearly what they're going for. And there's nothing wrong with that strategy. Maybe that's the only path.
Yeah, we're talking about hypotheticals. In a situation right, the polls are showing right now, it's hard to imagine he's not going to pull off a substantial majority.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is the best part of the political game, is the what ifs.
And even speaking about the what ifs, like redistribution.
Or the worst part of the game, depending on how you want to look at it.
Right, fair. Redistribution, we now have 343 seats, and the way the ridings have been cut and divided, some analysis I've seen have 7 to 15 seats right there will swing Conservative, which gives Poilievre, almost ties it up. Like, if Aaron O'Toole had that same set of maps in 21, it may have been a tie coming out of the election. May have been much closer. So now you have that plus the campaign and how aggressive Poilievre is doing and how well he's doing in the polls. I want to read a quote to you. The hub.ca did a story on basically what we're talking about, and it caught my attention because the hub spoke with a senior advisor to Poilievre, unnamed source, someone in his office, sounds very close to him. And the question was essentially, if the Liberals try to stay on, even if they don't win the most seats. And the answer was, and I'll quote, "Constitutionally, that's their right, but we will go nuclear." That was the response. Now, when I read that, I was like, well, that's a heck of a statement. We'll go nuclear. But also admitting it is their constitutional right to stay on and seek the confidence of the House if he can do that after. But I thought back to 2008 when the coalition crisis happened. I was in the Prime Minister's office, and I remember I thought we were doomed, right? We all thought we were doomed. We were depressed. It was a Thursday or Friday that this happened, where I think it was Ralph Goodale came out and said, like, we have a deal. I remember Saturday morning, not sleeping all night, Saturday morning, getting out of bed and seeing my phone. And it was a message from Jenny, who I worked with at the Prime Minister's office, saying, all hands on deck. Everyone comes in now. And we all went in. And I remember there was so much happening. There was obviously talking to media, pushing different stories. There was a leak from where the NDP screwed up and included a Conservative MP on one of their conference calls. And that was given to media. And there was protests being organized. And we shot up to 50% in the polls. Again, this was just a few months after an election. And it felt like this election was being stolen from us. And that's what Canadians felt, and with the Bloc. So it was that. And but what does "we will go nuclear" mean?
Well, I what I said earlier, I think the biggest challenge for the CPC in particular has always been managing our base's expectations and how they feel about Justin Trudeau.
Right, I guess
Trudeau
maybe the comment was about the base and not even the party apparatus. You will lose control of
people. That's how I kind of interpret it, is you know, using friends of friends and family as, you know, card carrying conservative members, like they just every day of their life are confused as to how Justin Trudeau is still prime minister. Like they just don't believe anybody likes that guy. They never
have. And if you talk to hardcore liberals, no one will ever vote for Poilievre.
Exactly.
There's this weird.
Yeah. And so we are at a bit of a tipping point for the first time since 2015 where Trudeau is not as popular as he was. And he's definitely, I would argue, you know, down on his brand as well. But that being said, it doesn't change how conservative voters in particular feel about Justin Trudeau. So I think, you know, in that scenario, of course, they're going nuclear. They don't have a choice because other people are going to. So if you're not matching that,
right.
I think you're into big trouble, frankly. And especially in this environment where people are so angry and frustrated and there's so much economic anxiety, you've got to feed that.
Yeah, and at the same time, if you recall, every single election, CTV, CBC, and Global, all racist to say who is an elected to a minority government, not realizing that that's not actually our political system. Yeah. It could come after. So we're trained in Canada to think whoever gets the most seats gets it. So I think conservatives will feel robbed. We'll feel that this is stolen from us, mm-hmm. that if we get the most seats, and this election, we don't get to govern after it. Mm-hmm. But I worry, like when we say, you know, and if I read that quote from you from The Hub. I've seen a similar quote, the nuclear option, I've heard in other news stories. So it's something that they're saying, and it just, it causes me pause. Like, mm-hmm. what is that?
Yeah, and like I said, I still think right now Poilievre's in great shape for a record majority. Like I really do. The issue set is in his favor. You know, he's been so disciplined about staying on message, and he's really found a way to tap into younger voters. I use the example of a couple of family friends and their younger kids. You know, they're organically sharing Poilievre content on their
right.
social channels, and they
right.
are rabid for him. Like
right.
they feel like he actually gets what they're concerned about. And so after an election, if that didn't translate into a majority, which again would be surprising at this point in time, you know, wow, there's going to be a lot of really intense feelings out there. And I think the party would have to immediately fill that void. In a situation where Poilievre doesn't have a majority, but still has the most seats, I'd argue he's still okay. I think he's got, you know, commanding control of the party apparatus.
Oh, for him as leader of the party?
Yeah,
absolutely.
In general, in his ability to govern, actually. I shouldn't say just in his ability to be the leader of the party. I meant in his ability, he has the most seats and he forms government. Even if it's a minority government, I'm pretty bullish on the fact that he would be able to form government for a couple of reasons. One, I think at that point, the knives will come out for Trudeau so aggressively, there's no stopping it then. I really think that's true. I think the NDP in that scenario will have lost a lot of seats, and they will not be in a position to be beneficial to anybody.
Right.
And I think that will obviously cause, you know, soul searching and identity crises for those parties. And the voter coalition that Poilievre is trying to build right now is you know, it's representative of Canadians.
Well, as a political podcast host who wants to peel back the onion, the political onion, I really think a conservative government would be very fun to cover and do lots of stories on.
Oh, can you imagine the hysteria in the Ottawa bubble here? My goodness.
Yeah, it'll be something. It'll be something.
Yeah.
I think this next election is going to be fascinating for so many reasons. Obviously, you have Pierre Poilievre and Justin Trudeau, two giants in Canadian politics. I think that we're going to be talking about this upcoming election for decades to come. And this may very well be the nastiest, meanest fight of our life that we see. And dare I say, perhaps the most entertaining as well from a political observer perspective. All right, Tasha, thanks so much for joining us here on Background, having a drink and talking politics like we always like to do. Much less stress this time where we don't have to make big decisions and figure out whether we have a deals or not in Parliament, whether to keep
and,
ourselves
and
afloat,
or what level of lockdown we are in each
right.
potential province, and if we have to wear masks everywhere we go.
We're actually in the same room right now, which is a rarity for us.
I know, so I'm not used to seeing you in the
flesh.
It's
great to see you.
Yeah, you too.
I actually think this episode of On Background is something people should download now. Don't just listen to it, download it and save it, because the morning after the next election, we may very well be living this reality where the Conservatives have the most seats, but not a majority. In fact, you should download all of the episodes of On Background and also share with your friends as we continue to grow our amazing audience. Each week, our numbers are going up and I'm having so much fun telling stories and having these conversations with politicos. If you have any ideas of stories we should tell, please email me at onbackground@ipolitics.ca.